Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
What do you want to hear from Shane Waldron? Because he's taken a lot of heat this week.
Here's what I want to hear. I want to hear him say,
I think every week we're learning as an offense as a whole, you know, where we're at. I think for us right now, you know, starting point for the offense as a whole is to be eliminating negative plays. But for us, you know, you got to adjust and adapt and overcome every single week. For us, you know, looking to, get points in this league, creating explosives, you know, finding a way to be efficient down in and down out, and then be able to hit on an explosive play, being able to hit on a downfield shot, which hasn't come to fruition yet, but knowing that something we're going to keep going, not necessarily chasing that, letting it happen naturally within the flow of the game.
That's all I want to hear. I want to know that he's going to run the football.
And obviously the run game is something every single week we want to be able to lean on, so we got to be able to get that going.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
This is live.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. We did it, buddy. We made it to Friday.
Morning, Mully. Yeah,
we're
hey.
Here, pal.
Happy Friday.
Yeah.
TGIF. It is Friday, heading into the weekend. Going in hot.
We're going in hot. Yeah, that's right.
We got the Bears. Well, we got the Bears and Colts on Sunday, but coming in hot with yesterday, as we heard coming in, we started the day wanting to hear from Shane Waldron, the offensive coordinator. We ended the day having heard loudly and emphatically from Craig Counsell.
Yeah, how about that?
How about that? We got to get to that before we get to the other stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
That was, don't you think?
That was Dustin's show of emotion.
That was
he's been desperate
as
for
close
that.
To a rant as you're going to see from Craig Counsell because right. He didn't necessarily raise his voice,
nope.
Didn't really change much of his tone. But when you look at the content of what he said more than the way he said it, it resonated loudly among Cub fans, and I know it had to have echoed in the hallways of the front office.
Yes.
As a message. That was a message, Mully.
Well, I'm not arguing that. I thought it was almost an explanation. As to why things have gone awry, as to why they find themselves in the position they do. And frankly, watching that game, it was a lot like the season where you're kind of like, what? Like, what are you doing? Let's put this away. Why are you trailing? Okay, now you came back. What? Why are you losing again?
Kind of toyed with us.
Yes.
The whole season.
And they finally won the game.
This whole season, they have toyed with us.
Yeah, you feel that way.
The Cub fans feel toyed with. And it was before the game that Craig Counsell, I think, came as close to offering an explanation. That's a good way to put it, Mully. But finally waiting until the Brewers had clinched, they had celebrated, the champagne was probably still damp on the carpet floor in their clubhouse. But Craig Counsell was asked and addressed why the Cubs finished as far back of the Brewers as they did.
Yeah, I mean, I think the message sent really is that, look, there's a big gap. I mean, they're ahead of us by a lot. And it's a talented team on and off the field. It's a talented team. But there's a big gap and we got room to make up. There's no question about it. And so that makes it, frankly, that makes it daunting. They've been good, man. I mean, for the division, I mean, I'd say that about the other teams too, right? They've created a gap the last 2 years, in the division. So, yeah, we got room to go, man. Like we got work to do for sure.
Rock and roll, man.
Rock and roll, man. So,
listen, he was part of building that, and I would imagine that is a frosting of the arse a little bit, right? Don't you think that gets to him a tiny bit?
Yes, I do.
That's the team that he can't overcome, and
it's got to really just sit in his craw, as they say.
Sure.
And be frustrating. And it's not accidental, I think, that he waited until after the fact to essentially reveal that he feels like the Cubs didn't have enough.
Yeah.
And the standard is what the standard is. And I think when he talked about what they need to do to get to the point where they are a 90-win team, this is very interesting here.
Yeah, I mean, we've got to get better, man. Like the team we're chasing is 10 games ahead of us. You got to get better, and we should try to be building 90-win teams here. I mean, you know, like that's like what you have to do to, you know, that's the playoff standard. I mean, that's what you got to get to be safely in the playoffs, right? And safely in the tournament. So from that perspective, you know, we got a ways to go.
So part of it's explanation, part of it's a plea. Part of it's a plea for help. I don't think that the guy who was hired because of his ability to do more with less expected to have to do more with less here.
Well, that's a really good point. That's really the, you know, what would appeal to him about coming to Chicago? What would appeal to him is building a team that can win in the playoffs, not getting to the playoffs.
Bingo. And when you are spending the season looking for a closer, waiting for the power bat to arrive, it never arrives. You don't think that you're going to encounter that situation when you left your comfortable nest in Whitefish Bay and you came to Chicago to do all the spending and all the winning, and all of a sudden you feel like you're a bat short and an arm short all season long.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he didn't say that, but he did say they need to think in terms of building a 90-win roster. This is not a 90-win roster. It's barely going to limp to 85 if they're lucky.
Mm.
And what have we said about the Cubs all season long? They've lacked a power bat. They've lacked a closer. They didn't do what we thought they might do at the deadline.
Yeah.
They threaded the needle. Nobody needs to thread the needle. Build a winner. That's what he's saying without necessarily saying it in that way. But that's what you heard from a manager that I think sounded a little fed up.
Well, I think that it's very interesting because I think when we think about the Cubs and when we talk about the Cubs, what they have done is they have attempted to build from within, right? They have they've traded players, gotten pieces, developed those pieces, and they want to win with their own players as opposed to being reliant upon free agency, et cetera. And they believe that's the better way to win. I'm not saying they're wrong, but they're biding their time.
Right.
And they're waiting on people as opposed to going out and just getting the extra bat, getting the closer, getting the pieces that were not in place.
With their resources.
With all the incredible resources that they have. So, you know, the counter to that would be them telling you, well, we're over the tax threshold because of the
I think I heard Craig Counsell shrug last night.
Well,
I think that's what this was.
Yeah.
Right?
Listen,
he didn't say that, and maybe we're interpreting it the way that it fits with what we have talked about.
Mm-hmm.
The Cubs are a big market team. They need to continue to act like it. I don't think he said it in those terms, but saying you need to build a 90-win team.
Yes.
The only way you do that, not the only way you do that, but the way that you want to go about that when you're in Chicago and you're with the Cubs is to buy your way to 90 victories. And I think that's why he came here. The challenge that he talked about on day one, the challenge that he wants to attack and he's going to be all in. But I think that he felt like that it would have been different this year because of their ability to go out and have the resources that he lacked in Milwaukee. And they didn't necessarily do that.
No,
so
they did not.
Let's go back to this idea that it was Bob Nightingale, I believe, the USA Today mm-hmm. report about friction and tension.
In the front office.
I think this
Which is the manager versus the general manager. That's what the friction is.
Or the president in Jed Hoyer, or the ownership with Tom Ricketts.
Okay.
I think when you're talking about front office, it's what we heard a glimpse of, a snippet of in that clip, and the way that it was interpreted by many people who were in that room yesterday. This is a manager that feels like they need more, and the only way you get more is to spend, and you've got an ownership group in a front office that is understanding the way this winter is going. With a decline in revenue,
yes,
RSNs everywhere are going to be making baseball salaries come down a little bit during free agency, and there's going to be some friction ahead, and I think that's what Bob Nightingale's little note kind of previewed or forecast.
Well, I think it's a good plan to build up your minor league system and to have guys that every year you got someone coming up. Every year you're going to add something to the mix. I also think that they have enough players and enough good young parts that they could have made moves and they could have gotten better. And I think when you get to the trade deadline and you make a move for a third baseman that maybe helps you moving forward, but it wasn't, I don't think they made a move where you said, oh, that changes them as a team. They're so much better now. And I think that's what he's looking for.
I think you're right. I think that's a good way to put it. You know, to compare the way we talk about a different sport, but we talk about the Bears and Shane Waldron getting too cute with the offense sometimes.
Yeah.
I think sometimes the Cubs get too cute with their roster and their approach to the trade deadline or the offseason. Just go get a closer. Go get a power bat.
Yeah.
When you try to thread the needle, yeah, you get Isak Paredes and you can talk yourself into the fact that he's an upgrade over Christopher Morel and all the things that make him a smart trade piece. But I think what Craig Council's saying, just build a 90-win team. Go out and get somebody. We're going to have pitching depth. We're going to have bullpen depth. Don't make my pitching coach have to jump through hoops and get everybody right and go back to the lab and 24/7. All the things that make this a very challenging season, make it less challenging by giving me more.
You know, we came into the season feeling like they were a bat short, right? I mean, that was just – I still think they're a bat short. But it was the problems in the bullpen that submarined their season. When you really look at it and you look at the number of – issues that have arisen and how they, and that's baseball. You know, your bullpen changes on a yearly basis. And the fact that you were either unwilling or unable to make some moves that got you better in that area is really interesting now as you look back on their season.
I think you're right. And you're talking about also a manager adjusting to, or he got used to life with Josh Hader and Devin Williams, and he comes to Chicago, and you think Adbert Alzolay is going to take that next step, and that seemed like a very long time ago, but he was ineffective, and then he was injured. And then nobody really kind of had the capacity to fill that void. And so you are a closer short all season long. Heart attack Hector wasn't the answer.
Nope.
And certainly those blown saves explain a lot when you're talking about why the Cubs are on the outside looking in.
And you know, had they even fixed that, they still would have been flawed. It's not like they were without flaws. But if they had fixed that, maybe the season would have turned out differently. Maybe you pick up 10 wins that you weren't anticipating. And if you had 10 more wins right now, you'd be a totally different team.
You'd be that 90-win team that Craig Council needs and wants to see next year when he's in his second season. Assuming he's back for a second season, no reason not to.
Yeah, no, he's back.
He didn't talk his way out of a job. But
No.
It was a nice message sent from the manager, and I think that it qualified as a show of emotion that a lot of people have been wanting him to do and show and see.
Yeah, I mean, look, that stuff, I got no problem with anything he said.
I don't either.
I think anybody in Chicago, anybody that follows the Cubs, anybody that cares about the organization would agree with that 100%.
It was something you don't typically hear from a manager, but I think at least from that manager, you know, I think we're so used to having the very well stated and thought out and, you know, it's just very mild mannered Craig Council.
Yeah.
And I think it was pretty honest and open yesterday, even with a little hint of emotion. Good.
It was powerful stuff.
Powerful stuff.
Because it's really, this was part of the obituary, right?
Yeah.
Over this season. Seriously. That losing two games to Oakland was just a bridge too far.
This was the first eulogy to the 2024 Chicago Cubs.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And it was an interesting one. And meanwhile, Shohei Ohtani put on a show last night that you won't see very often in baseball. He just, first of all, to get to the 50, to create the 50-50 club is an astounding accomplishment. No player in the history of the game has ever hit 50 homers and stolen 50 bases in the same season. He's the first one. And, you know, he stands alone in a lot of different ways. He had a, what was it, 10 RBI night?
6 for 6, 3 home runs, 10 runs batted in, and oh wait, 2 stolen bases.
I mean...
the greatest individual effort in any game probably in baseball history.
Every skill on display. Everything that he can do was on display. And that's not true. Because he can pitch.
He didn't pitch.
Because this is him while recovering from Tommy John surgery.
This is his rehab assignment.
This is what he looks like while he's trying to get himself up and ready to play and contribute in all ways.
Shohei Ohtani's pitching rehab assignment including him going 51-51.
Is that absolutely unbelievable?
It is unbelievable. It's remarkable. It's all the adjectives you could use to describe get out your thesaurus because they all apply. I just don't think it's an exaggeration to say that this was the single most impressive offensive performance in a single game ever.
I don't know how you judge that. I don't know how he could have done better. I suppose he could have gone 6 for 6 with 6 homers. But honestly,
true.
I mean, but then he wouldn't get a stolen base.
I don't think anybody's ever had. Exactly. It's funny. He stole bases and he didn't just round them all night long. I don't know how to.
Honestly, God, I was waiting for him to drive himself in. I mean, that's how spectacular he was in that game.
And
I know it's against Miami. Okay. And it's later in the season.
It's still major leaguers. It's still something that to hit 3 home runs, to have 6 hits and 6 at bats. I think the stolen bases seem a little bit like rubbing it in. I'm better than you. I'm better than everybody. Watch me run.
That's the thing.
Try to throw me out.
He's just better than everybody.
He is.
And he's going to be a MVP DH. That's going to happen. So, and he has earned it.
No doubt about it.
It's just.
This is a question.
This is him rehabbing.
You know, big picture with Ohtani moving forward, does having him pitch make him less effective offensively? And if the answer is yes, or you're even tempted to answer yes, is it worth having him pitch? Would you now take this every single year for your $70 million per season that he is cost? Oh, wait, 68 deferred, 2 up front. Would it be worth having him not pitch if he were to be able to supply this kind of production? Because I think when you put him on the mound every fifth day, he's not going to be stealing 50 bases because he doesn't want to risk that kind of injury.
Texter says Sean Green had 4 homers and 19 total bases in a single game. Sean Green, by the way, his Dodger record for home runs, shattered. Shattered by Shohei yesterday.
Shattered by Shohei. Yes.
I think he had 49. It's the most he had in the season.
Sean Green is a good one. It comes to mind. I don't know that the stolen base component was there. It's a remarkable show of versatility, of power, of strength and speed, all the things that, you know, how many tools does he have? More than 5.
Well, and that, I mean, how good is he as a pitcher? I'm just saying, like,
I love the possibility that still exists that he's going to help this team in October, and he's going to take the ball from Michael Kopech, who has been unbelievable, one of the best trade deadline acquisitions in Major League Baseball, and Kopech's going to pitch the 8th, and Ohtani's going to pitch the 9th, and he's going to strike out Aaron Judge, and the Dodgers are going to pop corks and celebrate.
I mean, is it that?
It's faded.
It's not inconceivable.
It's not inconceivable.
It's not. It wouldn't surprise you.
It'd be great for baseball.
Yeah.
He's
an unbelievable talent.
Yeah.
And he's a extraordinary player. And the idea that he was available, even if it cost you close to $750 million, the idea that you could bring a guy like that in is.
Look, we're not going to be in any Ohtani race. I'll tell you that right now.
Well, not everyone.
Back to the other baseball story.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah. Because we also will get to the Bears.
Oh, we got to talk about the Bears.
It's a football Friday.
The Bears have a game.
Sunday.
They have a game Sunday.
Yes, and they talked about it on Thursday.
And they will talk about it again a little bit tomorrow. But it's our last chance to talk about it before the game. And if you are if you're available, do yourself a favor before Chicago takes on Indianapolis. Tune in Sunday morning from 9 to noon for your local Ford dealers pregame show. It's right here on 670 The Score. It's presented by Aurelio's Pizza. Join Olin Krutz, Patrick Manley, and some guy named Mully, and you'll get they'll get you up and running and ready for the game. And then immediately following the Cubs postgame. So once you watch the game, go watch the end of the Cubs game. You can watch the postgame, and then back to the radio. And we will be on approximately at 4:30. The three of us again will have instant reaction. Well, an hour after, so we'll be able to kind of take a moment and breathe.
Take
and
a moment, have, take a deep breath.
Reaction.
Yeah.
And we'll have the Great Clips postgame show presented by Wonderverse, and we will take you right up to Sunday Night Football, and all of that can be heard on The Score in the Odyssey app.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun day. Bears-Colts, I think that they have an opportunity to get right, to get back on track, the winning ways. And we heard from Shane Waldron yesterday, a lot of other players. Coleman Shelton pushed back a little bit. The offensive line under siege, getting a lot of scrutiny and criticism that they have earned, but they're got a little chip on the shoulder. That's okay.
Good.
That's
play
what they
angry.
Need. Play angry. Do whatever it takes to create a downhill running game. You want to attack the Colts, the worst rushing defense since the 1978 Colts. I think they were in Baltimore then. So it's been a long time since the rushing defense has started the season this poorly, this porously. So if you're the Bears, that is a invitation, Shane Waldron, to ram it down their throats.
Colts were in Baltimore? What happened?
One night, there was a Mayflower van.
It's like the middle of the night.
And at 2 in the morning, Bob Irsay decided to pull out. And then they went to Indianapolis.
You're listening to a Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric Football Friday presented by your local Ford dealers and IDOT. It's not a game, Illinois.com. David, I don't know if you remember this, but I believe you were covering the Bears at the time. And they opened the season in Indianapolis. And a certain somewhat forgetful sports writer famously booked a flight to Baltimore.
Rick Tellender?
Rick had to drive to Indy.
That's a great story.
It was so funny. He tells me that. I just like threw my head. Are you joking?
Well,
it was a while ago.
It could happen.
You know, he just wasn't thinking.
Well, that had to have been 15, 20 years. They came to Indy in 1984.
That's what I'm saying. So this was probably the early 90s or the mid 90s. You're right. It was at least 10 years.
Yeah, because it had to be at least
was 10 or 15 years.
So, yeah, they came to Indy in 84. They built the Hoosier Dome.
But, you know, Rick was an old Sports Illustrated football guy. He got the schedule and he just booked his flights.
It happens. Sometimes you get off the plane and you go straight to the cab and you go to the hotel and you leave your bags back at the airport, like a Rick Tellender was known to do or did. We can fill the next hour with Rick Tellender stories.
I love Rick.
Yeah, I love Rick too.
He's a good man.
Yeah, it's great.
And we say it affectionately, but that did happen.
And he would laugh with us if
he
were sitting next to us. But if he were sitting next to us, he might be he's not up.
No, he'd still be awake if he was sitting next to us.
He's not
knowing
up.
Rick. More of a night owl than most humans.
So we got a lot to get to today. It's going to be a fun day. Plus, we're going to cap it off with a little fun segment at 9 o'clock, Premier League. We are talking Premier League soccer today.
Big party in Lincoln Park.
Yeah. And you are dressed for the occasion.
I'm wearing a United shirt.
And we have some very special guests coming into the studio.
Yeah.
We're going to transfer from here for the Twitch audience into the performance studio.
Mm-hmm.
The Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Studio.
That's right.
And we have some very special guests that we're going to talk football with at 9 o'clock.
Well, they're English, so it's football.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I'm going for effect. I know.
You know. I don't need the accent.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm just following your lead on this one, pal.
They're all English speakers.
Oh, I know.
It is the Premier League.
I know.
All right. All right, we got a ton for you. We're going to start with the pick six. We'll pick apart all the stories of the day. You're going to get our predictions. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Pick Six, sponsored by Affinity Whole Health. Do what I did. Visit FeelGreatIllinois.com to learn more about their testosterone therapy or their weight loss options. Were you disappointed to hear Bears offensive coordinator Shane Waldron say the Bears are going to look at each of the seven sacks against Caleb Williams last week as an entity rather than part of a larger scheme theme about the struggles on their offense, even while conceding a run game with naturally correlate to less pressure? Here's what Waldron said.
You know, the sacks can be a sack number, but the pressures is the more thing that we're focused on. You know, what are those games looking like? Are we handling them? Are we tight? You know, including the running backs, including the tight ends when they're asked to be a help in pass protection as well.
Disappointed to hear that from the Bears OC?
I'm not sure what I heard. I listened to that several times. I'm not sure exactly. I listened to him. He uses a lot of words, and he says a lot. And he doesn't really address many things. Was he implying that the tight ends and the running backs are partially responsible? I think what he's saying is that the protection has broken down in all aspects, not just with the offensive line. I think he's trying to stand up a little bit. I think he's protecting the protection a little bit. But, you know, listen, run the damn ball. It's that simple. And you will find things a lot easier. He seems to acknowledge that fact, but I would not look. He's trying to look at their protection issues in their entirety rather than as a problem with the offensive line. And I understand that other players have missed blocks and other players have been responsible, but the line, for the most part, has been the most responsible and has missed the most rushers and been beaten one-on-one quite a few times. So I don't. You know, the idea that the line is angry and doesn't like the criticism they've gotten, well, you know how to avoid that, right? Just protect the pocket, keep the quarterback clean, and I don't think anyone's going to say anything. But when you come out of a game and you have seven sacks allowed and 11 quarterback hits, that's not pressures. Guy was pressured all day, but he got hit 11 times and sacked seven times. That comes down to player survival. You cannot have that, and you've got to change things up if you have it. So I was hoping for more concrete, more substantive statement from him, but at least he's aware of the problem.
I'm with you 100%. It would have been nice to hear a little bit clearer, but it's almost exactly what we heard from Coach Eberflus, right, where he said kind of the same thing. It's everybody, but he never – he didn't blame the scheme. They're not blaming. They're not pointing a finger or taking a thumb to themselves. They're kind of pointing at everybody else on offense. But I think we can all keep asking, what's up with the scheme?
We can keep asking that. I think they're talking around the obvious thing, and this is what coaches do when they realize that they were just overmatched and manhandled, and you can't stand up there and be as honest as you might like to be. Isn't that as honest as I hope that they are being in the meetings, on the practice field, and watching the tape, because they were manhandled. And we can talk about communication, as Caleb Williams did. We can talk about receivers running routes that didn't correlate or connect with the pass protection or pressure, or like Cole Kmet implied. And we can talk about all these things. And heck, if you even want to go in to say that each of the seven sacks was an entity unto itself, whatever that means, fine. Bottom line, Bears were manhandled on the offensive line. They need to get better. They need to get tougher. I don't know if they can get stronger, but they need to find ways to keep the Colts off their quarterback and win one-on-one battles. And then you can talk about the next level of protection, which is scheme, cadence, using the quarterback, and identifying. There's a clip going around where Caleb Williams was identifying the right guy. He changed the protection at the line of scrimmage, backed up, took the snap, and Braxton Jones was still beaten. So you can't do everything from the schematic or the identification point of view. Sometimes you just have to win mano a mano.
I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
That's Brad Biggs. Biggs' time is 7 this morning. He'll share his official pick. Did you notice on Sunday when he was listed as inactive, Velus Jones Jr. was also listed as a wide receiver? And how about over the last 2 days, he's lined up as a wide receiver and not a running back? Didn't Jones move to running back so he could actually make this team?
Did not notice that. I am glad we got to Friday 6:06 before we mentioned the name Velus Jones. I don't think there's many guys on the roster more irrelevant.
Position change.
I don't know that it's a position change. I think it's probably out of necessity. Keenan Allen hasn't practiced all week, and maybe they need another guy as a potential fill-in, but he's not going to be. If he wasn't the guy last Sunday, I don't think he'll be the guy this Sunday. They did nothing really in the special teams kick return game to warrant, you know, oh boy, we need Velus Jones. I don't think I've heard anybody say that. Did he move the running back? I don't know, and I don't really care.
Say it.
I don't really care.
What I find alarming and interesting, though, about this, and you brought his name up, David, is Keenan Allen. And it's almost like this might be worse than they're letting on. And they don't have enough depth at that position, as you mentioned. So that's why he's there. I just hope that's not the case, because they're like they're trying to get him up to speed because they know more than they're willing to share right now.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I think that it's – I noticed it on the when the injury report
Inactives.
Came out. Yeah, I noticed that he was listed as a wide receiver, and I thought, well, that's odd, because I was told he was a running back, and I believe the coach said he was proud of him for carrying the ball in the second half of that game after he committed the horrible flub early in the game. Look, I think it matters just because they did sign a wide receiver, right, to the practice squad. They lost a defensive end off the practice squad to New England, I believe, to their regular roster, and then they replaced him with a wide receiver. So it's just interesting. It's just interesting that you made a guy play a different position in order to justify keeping him on the team. And now that he's made an error and can't play, and I don't know, does he play? Do you bring him back? I don't think you bring him back as a returner. Can you bring him back as a wide receiver? Is he more comfortable in that position? Is that why they made the change? Or did they realize that he's not going to help him in the running game? So I find a position change interesting in week 3. That's all.
Here's another question.
That's the voice of Mark Grody. He's here at 825. What is your take on Shohei Ohtani becoming the first ever member of the 50-50 club? Is he immortalized forever due to that accomplishment? Which of the two achievements is more impressive? And can you believe he did this while recovering from Tommy John surgery?
Listen, I think that that's part of the story here. I think the fact that you paid this guy, you brought him in, and he's like the best player in baseball while he's recovering from Tommy John surgery is just about as extraordinary. Second Tommy John surgery is about as extraordinary as anything that you'll see in sports. He is just a spectacular player, and his performance last night underscores it. The idea that he is the first member of the 50-50 club. I mean, people have stolen many bases. People have hit many homers. But to be able to do both those things is just mind-boggling. It just underscores the greatness of the player and how peerless he quite frankly is. He's the best player in baseball. And even as he's recovering from an injury, he can put up a season. Like, this is Ruthian. This is the sort of thing where you're just, I'm so much better than everyone else that I can do this as a leadoff hitter, right? Hasn't he been leading off? I don't even know where to put it. I think, you know, I had thought about it and he was heading toward it and it didn't surprise me. But then, like, the way that it happens, the way that he meets the moment like he did yesterday, it was just unbelievable. It's just an extraordinary achievement, and it's a pity that he's not doing it here in town.
It is a pity he's not doing it here in town. Speaking of not doing it here, I did look this up to share it with the audience. April 22nd and April 23rd, Ohtani and the Dodgers at Wrigley. So, I mean, if this doesn't get you to go out of your way.
Or? Tokyo.
Well, okay. I guess most of us can't get the
show trip.
Let's go.
Scorehouse Tokyo.
Let's go.
Right? No?
I'm in.
What else, Dustin?
Dustin, we'll shove you into the airplane like they do the subway.
Hopefully it'll be a better airplane than the White Sox travel.
Steerage. Is that the right word?
As long as we get the first class, the 8 first class seats.
So what we saw last night was historic and obviously underscored why he is worth every penny of the $70 million he will be paid this year and the $700 million they have committed to him over the next 10. That's what Dave Roberts said after the game. His own manager put his owner on the spot and said this is a good return on his investment and even invoked the $700 million term. You don't hear that very often.
No.
But you don't see what you saw last night at all, and you never have. And the only thing that you can say is, wow, this was this raised a lot of questions. First of all, you look at why in the world would Skip Schumacher, get to know that name a little bit, maybe Sox fans, why would you throw to him after he hit 2 home runs? He showed up again in the 9th inning, then he talked about pitching to him after the game. I don't understand that. But what Ohtani has done is effortless, and it's something that you just can't describe or explain adequately until you see it, and then he looks so smooth and fluid, and you realize that he not only can hit and he can run, but he can pitch, and he has yet to do that because he is apparently rehabilitating his right arm. This is one heck of a rehab stint, making history in this way. It is Ruthian. It is Jordan-esque. You're watching one of the greats, one of the all-time greats, not only today in modern Major League Baseball, but ever to play the game.
Oh, my God. What a question. What a question.
Joe Fortenbaugh, 740 with Mully and Hall. What do you think of the lasting impact of Thursday's story on the White Sox demise by The Athletic will be? How could it leave a mark? Or will the Sox just ignore it and move on?
I hope they don't ignore it and move on. I know it was a long day at 35th and Shields for everyone who works there. And it was a day off from playing, so they were spared another loss as they limp toward making the kind of history no team wants to make. They've got to let this register. They've got to let this sink in. They've got to recognize and realize that they have been made the laughingstock of Major League Baseball. And all that they have done in approaching this record is bring more attention to their futility. And as the national media descends onto the South Side or takes a microscope into what is wrong, they've got to address how to fix it. And they've got to be honest and transparent and look in the mirror and understand the kinds of things that are limiting them from becoming credible again, respectable again, and the things that are in the way. It starts with you have to spend money to make money. It starts with an approach. It starts with being willing to do that. I think they're not there yet because next year the general manager is saying it's going to be a long season. We have heard reports of cost cutting. I don't know if that's the way you get there. I don't know if that's the way to approach this. They don't travel well. They are cheap on analytics. They have got a reputation issue. They have poor messaging, and they have bad players. They've got to come up with a plan that beefs up the front office, addresses the analytic deficit, and tries to find a way to send a message, whether it's symbolic or otherwise, that the Sox aren't cheap. That's going to be very difficult to do. Because it's hard to unring this bell that went off yesterday about 7:30.
Well, you guys did a great job yesterday covering that story and letting everybody know about it. Things have been bad enough, and now that story kind of rubbed your face in it. And if that doesn't get your attention, I don't know what would.
Well, they've identified, you know, the person responsible for why the White Sox are putting together what it will end up being an historically awful season. So, you know, I think there are both the whys this happened, right? You know, the kind of details such as the you know, bizarre battle statistically. What are we going to use? What aren't we going to use? How behind they are with other people. But I think that the you know, just identifying the person responsible is really an important thing to do. And I don't know if it was as bad for the organization as it was for the owner of the team, because, you know, that was the emperor unclothed. That is what we witnessed in that story, the way it was written, everything that was said about it, is stuff that you kind of understand. So I think that, you know, the Sox are a mess, and they're created by one man who has, you know, continued to influence decisions. This is what was pointed out in the story. So, you know, the question for me would be not if everybody in the organization read the story, but if the guy responsible did. I'd like to know if Jerry read that story, or if he just got someone to tell him the details, or did it move him in any fashion?
Mm.
You know, he threatened to have a news conference at the end of the year, didn't he?
He says that he will address it all at the end of the season.
So I'd love to see that. Yeah. I'd love to see if he addresses any of it, and if there is pushback to anything he has to say, how he responds to that. There's part of me that's surprised we haven't heard from Jerry, just because of the nature of what has happened over
you
the
mean
years.
In general, or after this story?
After
appeared?
The story.
Yeah, I thought we might yesterday.
I did.
I thought we might get another statement that was refuting some of the things that were either alleged or reported.
Right.
And you have seen front offices, ownership groups, whatever the case may be, respond to situations like this, similar to this, because this was a metaphorical takedown.
Yeah, I mean, it was a guy with a 1950s baseball mentality being told that he's responsible for the worst season ever because he has a 1950s baseball mentality. He has never entered the modern era,
but
and that's the problem with the team.
And if that is consistent with what you say, then if you have a 1950s baseball mentality, you're not responding to media reports. You're just kind of taking your punishment.
Yeah, or you're just ignoring it. You know, you're just pretending, you know, that you're still fully clothed as you march down the street.
With your leather jacket.
Nothing else.
Boy, that's a good question.
That's the voice of Ron Coomer. He's here at 8. Now that the Cubs have officially lost the division and are out of the wild card race, who do you hold most responsible for a season that doesn't fit the definition of success? Craig Counsell, Jed Hoyer, Tom Ricketts, or the players?
I love this question. I think it's a really strong and impactful one. I think the answer is management / ownership. So I think that the responsibility lies with either Jed or Tom. And it's hard to separate that. It's hard to separate the baseball budget from the players that were acquired and the players, quite frankly, that weren't acquired. So I think that Craig Counsell came in and he probably had to learn the team for a year and figure out who he likes, who he doesn't like, who he wants, who he doesn't recognize as a winning player, etc. So I don't hold him entirely responsible, although Dustin will in a minute. And I think that the players themselves, it's not like everyone has covered themselves in glory. It's not like everyone has maxed out their capability. But, you know, you are what you are as a player. And if you do not perform as well as you need to, then you're going to be shipped out. It's real simple. That's life in professional sports. So it comes down to the person that's picking the players and the person that is financing the picking of the players. So it's hard for me to just say it's on Jed without knowing what moves he might have wanted to move and whether Tom rejected that or not. And it's hard for me to blame Tom without knowing if Jed was spending the money wisely and he understood the budget, etc. So I think that I think they should have been a better team. And I think those were that you know, take a pick of that and make an argument with those two.
Well, I apologize in advance for the answer. Disappointing. But it's the players at the top. At the end of the day, they throw the ball, they swing at the pitches. It's the players. And then, honestly, it's Jed, because he chose the players, and he also gave out contracts. This team's not going to look very different next year unless something massively crazy happens. There's not a whole lot of flexibility. And then it's Craig Counsell, and then it's Tom Ricketts.
Don't have to apologize for that answer. So I think what happened yesterday before the game, when Craig Counsell talked about having to put together a team capable of winning 90 games, he set the standard of having a 90-win roster. He clearly was saying he doesn't have that. And what he did, as much as anything yesterday in saying that and being as vocal as he was about it, transparent even, was that he lumped Jed Hoyer and Tom Ricketts together. This is a management/ownership issue, and this is a management/ownership disappointment in 2024. They were a bat short. They were an arm short. That's what you heard as much as anything from Craig Counsell on Thursday. That's me interpreting him. But I won't be the only one, and I don't think that was not a mistake, because I think that was the intent of his words at that time. You've heard Jed Hoyer talk about threading the needle, and you've heard talk about the competitive balance tax and not going over the luxury tax and all the things that are realities for baseball team presidents and for owners like Tom Ricketts and chairman of – he's got a board to answer to as well. All the things that he tries to keep in check financially. They have the 7th highest payroll in baseball. I don't know if they're going to take a step back or not, but I think what you heard from Craig Counsell was that they can't afford to. Development happened in the major league level with Miguel Amaya and Pete Crow Armstrong and Michael Bush. A couple of those things went well in the second half of the season. Was it too late? What happened in May and June? Was the development and devotion to development, did it cost the Cubs in May and June? Because they lost the division in May and June. And that is a fair question to ask. And it was amplified yesterday. So what Craig Counsell was doing yesterday, as much as anything, was he was answering this question for us. He wasn't saying not me, but he was saying it's mostly them. That's, again, that's what I heard. When you say that you need to set a standard for having, and it is having a 90-win team, he's saying we don't have a 90-win roster. Help!
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
What week 3 NFL game besides Bears Colts are you most looking forward to, and please tell us why?
Fun games on the schedule. I think when you talk about the lineup, I look at the Lions and the Cardinals. What Lions team is going to show up? And that matters here in Chicago, because you don't know what exactly you're looking at in terms of, is Detroit for real? Are they going to be a playoff team again? Are they going to win the division and run away with it? I don't know. So I like that game. Are the Vikings for real? I think that's going to be an interesting game. But I think that the marquee game, I don't know, there's a lot of good matchups. Baltimore can't start 0-3. The Cowboys have them in their place. I wonder if that's going to be something that John Harbaugh finds a way to, you know, beat the Cowboys on the road. That would be fascinating as well. So there are a lot of games to choose from. I'm focused on the division. I'm curious about the Packers and if this Jordan Love gamesmanship is just gamesmanship, or is he actually going to try to play and come back? But I think that of all the games that are going on, I'm intrigued by if the Arizona Cardinals are going to beat the Detroit Lions and turn the NFC upside down, because that would scare you from a, you know, if you look at the Cardinals, that would be a surprise. And then it would amuse you if you were looking at the Lions and waiting for them to stumble.
I had 4 other games written down besides the Bears Colts, but based on timing and lifestyle, I'm going Ravens Cowboys is my can't miss game.
That's a good one. I mean, listen, this is week 3. There are a lot of good games and a lot of really important games. I'm curious about a lot of them, and I I think that, you know, we've seen the Texans. We know what they can do. They're playing the Vikings. That fascinates me. The Eagles against the Saints, I find that the Saints are scoring points like crazy. Vic Fangio is now coaching the Eagles. I'm just very curious after what happened to the Eagles last week, giving a game away in the fashion in which they did. I got to tell you, I think there were a ton. I like that Lions-Cardinals games a lot because, Kyler Murray was phenomenal a week ago. Does that hold up against the Lions? I'm very curious. And just from a personal standpoint, I'm really interested in the Chiefs against the Falcons just because I want to know. You know, the Chiefs are just barely winning these games, and the Falcons are kind of ahead of the Bears in a way for wild card
hope. You want to see if Kirk Cousins worked on Tuesday.
That's a good question to have. Yeah, there's a lot of them, though. I don't know that there are any games I would tune out. 49ers, Rams. I mean, Rams got to make a move.
Rams are staring at 0-4.
They're staring at 0-4.
That's amazing because although the injuries, you know, they don't. Their wide receiving core is totally compromised and wrecked. And they lost some offensive line. I think that could be a very difficult season ahead for Sean McVay.
Dolphins, Seahawks? I'm just saying, these are games that you're getting increasingly desperate.
Seahawks are staring at 3-0. If they win against the Dolphins
and
team.
Shouldn't they?
They should with that backup quarterback and McDonald's defense up there. I think that could be a 3-0 team. So you could be looking at a very big surprise in the NFC. Fun stuff.
All right, that is the pick six. We have the extra point next, and it's a good one. We'll find out who wins the game on Sunday. Dun, dun, dun. We have all the information here. I believe we're all perfect, right? Everybody's picked this season two
games
for two.
In. Yeah, right. 2-0. It's okay. Not exactly.
Are you 2-0?
It's a small sample size.
I'm 2-0.
Yes, I'm 2-0.
Dustin, are you 2-0? Oh, no, he took the Bears last week. Okay. This is a desperate play for Dustin.
Must win.
Must win.
Make a statement.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 the score.
The Bears are getting 1.5 points at the Colts this Sunday. Do you believe they will hand the Colts a third straight loss? Will Caleb Williams throw his first NFL TD? Can you please share your pick and please give us your projected score of this game?
Yes, I think the Bears will win and get back on the right track. I think the Colts are the ideal opponent for a team looking for some offensive identity. They're the ideal defense to face when you want to give your rookie quarterback something to lean on and a running game that needs to have a big day so your offensive line can feel like it does something well and right and good. The Bears' offensive line through two games doesn't do anything well or right or good. They're bad. They're bad because of the scheme, if you want to say that. They're bad because of the overall execution. They're not getting off the ball. They're not moving the pile. They're not running downhill. They're not protecting the passer. All the things that you want to find that are necessities for any good offensive line, the Bears aren't doing. So this is an invitation. The Bears will win 26-17, and I think Caleb Williams will throw a touchdown pass. I don't know who it will be to, probably DJ Moore, so he'll be in a very good mood on Monday morning. He'll be very
animated.
He'll be effusive in his praise. He'll be very upbeat and positive, energetic, and I think that he will throw to DJ Moore for one touchdown. They'll get another one on the ground, and then they will kick four field goals from Mr. Santos. 26-17 Bears.
The Bears will hand the Colts their third straight loss. Yes, Caleb Williams will throw his first NFL TD. If we're going to predict that, I'm going to say it's going to be to a running back. Not sure which one. Can you please share your pick? Yes, Bears 17, Colts 10.
Wow.
But I have to say, you know, I love hearing all the guests that you guys have on give their predictions. But when Chris Chelios wasn't even on board of Bears yesterday. I thought, uh-oh.
I got to tell you, so I'm there's a couple things that happened yesterday that really bothered me. You know, the idea that DeForest Buckner is missing the game, and it's his first stint in his very long career ever on IR, is interesting to me, and I think it weakens them. And I think that Liatu Latu, their number one draft pick, their pass rusher, he also is day-to-day technically, but he hasn't practiced this week. And for a young player, I think it's difficult to be ready to play and to expect a lot from. So those are good things. I go back to what Mike Palm said, though. Teams that are 0-2 in week three since 2010 win 70% of the time. This is the Colts season. This isn't just another game on their schedule. And I get it. It could be a nice spot for the Bears to, you know, release the Kraken, release the running back, really start running the ball. But don't you think that the Colts are aware of their difficulties in that area? I really, that statistic bothers me. And so I'm going to go with the Colts winning 19-17.
Wow. Interesting. How they getting to 19? You think that 19th point will come in the fourth quarter, last 2 minutes of the game, Anthony Richardson leads the Colts down the field against that Bears defense?
I have more faith in their running back than their quarterback, but I do think the quarterback is a pretty talented guy.
Jonathan Taylor's really good running back.
That's right.
He could be a game breaker.
It's hard to win on the road when you're a rookie quarterback.
It is. Yeah, it reminds me, Jonathan Taylor reminds me at times of Saquon Barkley. Because of how fluid he is, he can be explosive. You give him inch, he'll take a mile. He'll run away from you. If he stays healthy, that is a problem. He has proven that. Anthony Richardson has proven less. I do wonder. He's streaky, though. He's a guy that is as capable of beating you down the field with a 60-yard pass to Alec Pierce, who ran 21.2 miles per hour on his first touchdown of the season. 21.2 miles per hour.
Wow.
And Anthony Richardson can do that one series and then throw you the football the next.
Yeah, I'm sure they're talking to him about protecting the ball, as you would. And I know that we heard Caleb say he was going to protect the ball, that won't happen again, which is good. But he also got beaten up pretty much in the last game. And that worries me about the bounce back situation. He's a young guy. Mm-hmm. His legs will be under him. He'll be good to go. But I just worry about it. And I think they're going to beat the Rams. And I think they're going to end up 9-8, as I predicted. But I just think there's a bad spot for them. I do not like this spot.
Noon Sunday. This is the CBS crew that the Bears-Colts game gets. Andrew Catalan, Tiki Barber, Jason McCourty.
What does that tell you? They're not the primetime team.
Not the primetime team. This is not a primetime game.
No.
I think the Bears were not ready for primetime.
Well.
Sunday night.
Yeah.
We waited all day for Sunday night.
And there's a huge difference.
And they weren't ready.
Between the Texans and the Colts. But this is their season. You open the season 0-2 and you got a real hard time getting back in it.
It is.
I just think that if they lose this game, then careers are in jeopardy.
Is Tiki Barber mad at anybody anymore? Was that last year? Wasn't he mad at somebody?
I thought Rondé was the better player.
I think Rondé was, maybe. Hall of Famer.
The twin.
Yeah.
That's right. Great pass rushing corner.
Great brother tandem.
Not many twin brother tandems in the NFL.
Best twin brother tandem in NFL history?
Is it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd have to look, I'd have to study that for a quarter of a second before I blurted it out. But you go right ahead.
I just did.
All right. 312-644-6767. We're going to get right to your phone calls. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
You're dead to us, Saquon.
Yeah, I mean, we've got to get better, man. Like, the team we're chasing is 10 games ahead of us. You got to get better. And we should try to be building 90-win teams here. I mean, you know, like, that's like what you have to do to, you know, that's a playoff standard. I mean, that's what you got to get to be safely in the playoffs, right? And safely in the tournament. So, From that perspective, you know, we got a ways to go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That's Craig Counsell.
Yeah, that's animated Craig Counsell. They've got a ways to go.
Fired up.
I know it didn't sound as fired up as some people sound when they get fired up, but that's Craig Counsell, I think, fired up, right? That's intentional. One thing we know about Craig Counsell, and we have learned through this long season, he doesn't say anything accidentally. And he doesn't say anything that doesn't have purpose or without intention.
Okay.
So if he says that, and he sets that bar at a 90-win roster, essentially, this is going to guide our conversations throughout the offseason. And I don't think that's by accident either. I think this is the way that he's talking internally. He shared it with the assembled media before the game, the first game after the Brewers clinched the title. And Mully, I think it sets the tone for an offseason where Jed Hoyer, Carter Hawkins, and Tom Ricketts are now on notice.
312-644-6767. We have a lot of people want to check in. Let's get through these calls. Kevin's in Palatine. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, good morning, guys. So the best part of him saying this now is the phone call is coming from inside the house. This is not you guys. This is not us. This is their... They fired a popular manager to bring in this guy who they said is the best manager in baseball. And he's telling the owner, the GM, and Jed that they are not good enough at their job, which is awesome. So I just want to say one mistake that I think Jed made that, you know, I've focused my ire this year on Dansby Swanson. But this Cody Bellinger contract is a freaking disaster. $27.5 million for a hurt 18 homer season. And anyone that thinks he's not taking another 27.5 of the Cubs money next year and he's going to get better. So Jed screwed up, and now we know why nobody wanted him, because $27.5 million for that. But think of these three guys, Bellinger, Swanson, and Saya. Between them, $76 million. There isn't a star in there. Those aren't stars. That's three quarters of the Brewers payroll. Those three guys, and none of them stepped up. Here are the four players I think earned their contracts this year. Ian Happ, Shota, Pete Crow has a higher WAR than Bellinger, and he's played half the season, and Michael Busch, and maybe Nico because he only makes $11 million. But I love that he did this because now they can't hide. This isn't a columnist. This isn't one of us. This is their manager. This is the guy they want to lead them, telling them, guys, you're not good enough at your job, and we all know what the problems are. This is awesome. He's pissed me off a lot this year, but this redeems almost everything.
Who do you blame? Who do you blame among those four people?
Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate
the
phone call.
Players, the, you know.
I think that he was basically saying Jed and Tom.
And I don't know how you can blame the players if they're overpaid and not good enough.
Well, I think that's hard for me to say it's all on the players. I just think they don't have enough of them. If you're going to be that 90-win team, you need actually Cody Bellinger, Dansby Swanson, Michael. You need these guys. You just need more.
Mike is in Glencoe. Hey, Mike.
Good morning, fellas. Two things about this week's Sox news, which I think are falling between the cracks. Mm-hmm. One is in the Jeff Passan story, where this extraordinary observation that the Sox have hired a guy, some guru mystic from the East, to be their culture leader. It sounds like the Houston Texans debacle, and it just scares the living daylights out of me.
Comp.
And no one's talking about that. And the other is, if I read the Athletic story right, Tony La Russa is traveling with the White Sox, which is not only crazy, but I think belies Chris Guest's comments that he runs the team, that he's the decision maker. I'd love to know your thoughts on both those points.
Well, I find it hard to believe that Tony would want to get on that airplane.
Huh?
Well, we know he's probably sitting in first class, so that's one of the eight seats allotted to Tony La Russa. I would, just for the sake of optics, I would eliminate that from the equation. I would not have him traveling with a team that is searching for answers to the extent the Sox are searching for answers. I just think it's a bad situation. But again, you need to realize the problem before you try to solve it. As for the White Sox hiring Brian Mailer, an ex-Navy SEAL with no baseball experience, former lacrosse player, to be the director of leadership, something, something, and continuing education. Big title, vague title. As I said the other day, some people look at that as great. They're trying to do something new. I looked at it as odd and vague and undefined, and why not go out and get somebody from an organization who's actually done this before and done it well? Rays, Brewers, small market team, whatever. You want to hire somebody, you're not reinventing the wheel on the South Side. What you need to do is regain some credibility first.
Adam is on the road. Hey, Adam.
Morning, gentlemen. Two quick things about the Bears quick. One, the last few years, if I remember correctly, the Bears have been on Sunday night within the first week or two or three of the season, and I believe that's because they haven't shown their true colors yet or been flexed out. And then, two, I just want to say that it feels like the Bears always come in with their plan, but they always fail to plan for what the other team's going to do. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Adam. Appreciate the phone call. I don't know that.
Halftime adjustments are good, though.
Who's good?
The halftime adjustments on defense have been good.
They have been. That's real. They've given up 3 points in the second half.
I just said it.
Yeah. I don't know if there's a correlation between tough starts for the Bears and Sunday night football appearances. They don't play well on Sunday night. Hmm. They're not, you know, the problem is waiting all day for Sunday night. I don't know what they're doing. But
they're waiting.
They're not making good use of their time.
Jack is on the road. Hi, Jack.
Hey, good morning. You know, how come nobody's brought up the Matt Eberflus? He doesn't get his team ready to play football. They could really be 0-2 right now. The whole talk, the whole offseason was, hey, Eberflus is on the hot seat. You better get going. And guess what? Same thing last year. Remember, it took him like half the season to kind of wake up, so to speak. Thanks, guys.
0-4 to start last year.
0-4 last year. They had a lot of problems. And a year ago at this time, we were talking about Matt Eberflus being on the brink of a crisis and getting shown the door because he fired his defensive coordinator. He had a lot of dysfunction.
They allowed him to resign.
They allowed him to resign. Okay, that's
under pressure.
Semantics. But I think why? No, you're right. You're exactly right. But I think the reason Matt Eberflus escaped some scrutiny going into this year was because of the job he did with the defense. He was calling plays again, and they survived week one. So they got off to a good start. But, hey, if they stumble and somehow don't take advantage of this break in the schedule, the next three opponents are beatable. And if they aren't all beaten, then I think we can have this conversation again.
Big time next. Mully and Haw on the score.
Morning, boys. What's going on?